Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, having a wonderful chance today to speak with a colleague from the other side of the globe. And our seasons seem to be transitioning in opposite directions, even though it seems like the temperature is much the same. I'm going to be speaking with Jonathan Fu, who is a physiotherapist and works on faculty in the physiotherapy department at Monash University in Melbourne, way down in Australia, and also is in the midst of completing a PhD. So, John, you're a busy lad, and I appreciate you making the time to chat.
Yes, thank you very much for having me on, Kevin. It's very exciting to be able to talk to you about our research.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because it's a burgeoning topic as far as I can tell. To get to the topic, I should probably alert people to what we'll be discussing, which is a paper, as you know, coming out in the July 2017 issue of Medical Education. And the title is The Economic Cost of Failure in Clinical Education, a Multi-Perspective Analysis. The hot topic that I was alluding to is this issue of trying to get better models and better information with respect to the costs or cost effectiveness or cost efficiency or a variety of related concepts of relevance to our educational practices. What gets a physiotherapist caught up in this emerging area?
Yes, so in my teaching at Monash University, I'm predominantly involved in the third year of our physiotherapy program. And third year is where students transition from being at the university learning their theoretical concepts to, in the second half of third year, being out on clinics having the first clinical experiences. And so we very much see that some students struggle with the transition, and we wanted to know what can we do better to prepare them for going out, and what can we do to support them when they do first go out to clinics to prevent some of this failure. And then I suppose the cost comes into this when you think about it from the point of view of the faculty, where there are limited resources available and you have to think about cost and what's available to you to pick the best option for management. And so the costs are difficult to work out, and we also don't know the cost effectiveness of our actions. And so really we just wanted to establish what is the, I suppose, the burden of the problem to help inform following research.
And can you give us a bit more of the context in terms of different parts of the world and different professions have different philosophies almost in terms of how willing they are to fail students? And at the transition point that you're focused upon, how prevalent is the issue and what is the typical pathway for those students who aren't successful the first time around?
Yes, so I think we would all appreciate that clinical education, your workplace-based learning, whatever you call it, in different parts of the world is very different, and also very different between different professions. With what we do here in Australia in physiotherapy, the students are very involved in their clinical placements, and therefore it's, I suppose, a lot easier for them to fail compared to other professions where they might spend a lot more time doing observations, and almost being there is enough to help you pass. And so in Australia, and I suppose at Monash University, the approach that we look at for failure is that we want to make sure that our graduates are ready for practice the moment they step outside the doors of the university. And so that is where the assessment bar is set. Because of that, you want to think about your competence-based education, where your students are going out as now fully qualified professionals, and you're thinking about the safety of the public, as opposed to trying to get numbers through the door because you know that there will be additional training and additional supervision outside the university.
Right. So even the notion of the economic cost of failure could be interpreted a few different ways. Are you interested in the lost costs of having trained people to a certain point that don't then get to practice? Are you talking about the cost of going through a remediation process of some kind for those students who have been determined to have failed? Or is there some other way that our listeners should be understanding that phrase?
Yes, so you've touched on something really interesting there, Kevin, which is where we're hoping to take this research, which is looking at how much does it cost to perform remediation, and therefore can you offset the cost of failure? So if you can prevent a student from failing in the future, have you actually made your money back? And also thinking about student failure, I think in any system there will be a number of students who fail, and that's not exactly undesirable either, because you do want to keep up the quality of your health workforce. But to consider that from a cost perspective, it's not present in this paper, but a metric we have used in the past is what we call the cost per continuing student educated metric, which I guess allows for the fact that there will be a number of students who fail, and we distribute that cost among the students that pass, which reflects the cost to society for the number of graduates you actually receive.
Okay, so I think that's an essential piece for us to tease apart so that the listeners can better understand your results. So this is an assessment of the cost to society as a result of having lost these individuals.
Yes, so in this particular study that we're talking about, the costs are the cost involved in that failure process. So that is how much money was put in by the government into this training, mm-hmm. which now needs to be paid for again because students will go through this process of clinical education again, as well as all of the time that goes into this. So the students have to do their placement again, so that's a lot of time on their behalf. University processes have to organize new placements, and you know, you've got some of that coaching happening and administration. So they have costs from the university point of view, as well as at the health service organization or the placement provider. Your hospital, you've got staff who are not paid to do clinical education. In our setting, they are just clinicians who take on the role of clinical educators within their daily work. Mm-hmm. And so that has an impact on the service provision there.
Great. Okay. And so what sorts of data were you able to get your hands on in order to start trying to actually make sense of the economic cost incurred?
Yes. So I think the most interesting aspect is not the actual monetary transactions that occur. So that is a fee payment. And that's quite obvious to a lot of people that you know that there's a fee paid for different aspects of clinical education. But what we also looked to measure was the opportunity cost, which is basically the time consumed that would not have otherwise been consumed because the student failed. Mm-hmm. And looking at this from the student's point of view, over a 5-week clinical placement block, we found that it was about 250 hours that they spent in addition to what they would have otherwise if they had not failed. And that's where a very large portion of the costs come to, and that's about $4,000. But then from the health service organization as well, there's lost productivity for their clinicians who could have been seeing students or doing other work within, could have been seeing patients or doing other work within the organization, which again came to about 30 hours across the 5-week clinical block, which we calculated to be about $1,000.
Right, and so the alternative, again, is this phenomenon that many people have called failure to fail. And I presume that you're not implying in any of these analyses that that's a lot of money or a lot of time, and therefore we should be passing students through who don't deserve to be passed through. How do you reconcile, or where do you stand on that position of whether those numbers you've just quoted are big or simply a fact of the reality that not everybody will be successful?
Yes, I think where the costs are useful is for justifying how much resources you might put into remediation strategies and potentially who should pay for these remediation strategies. So obviously the university is a key stakeholder in this, where they might be providing a lot of this support, but we found that percentage-wise, the educational institution or the university only incurs about 20% of the costs. So from this perspective, they might be hesitant to provide a lot of funding for remediation strategies when they know that a lot of the burden of failure actually goes to other participants. And this is only from an economic point of view. There are other factors that should lead decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's lovely that you touched on failure to fail, because this is something that we do see in clinical education, that educators, particularly more junior educators that we have in physiotherapy, are afraid to fail because they don't want that to reflect badly on the students or themselves. And so by no means are we saying that we should be trying to pass people along or lower the assessment standards just because there are costs involved.
Right. And so what is the next step with this work then, as you start getting a better handle on where the costs lie and what the relative balance of burden might be? Are you already seeing some change to the system that you think is required? Are there particular additional questions that you think need to be addressed before you can lay out some of the implications of these findings?
Yes, ideally where we would like to see the research going is incorporating considerations of cost into your intervention strategies. So, you know, educators are quite good at trying to work out what is the most effective strategy, what is going to create the biggest change. But unfortunately, we don't think about costs a lot of the time. So the sort of analysis I'm talking about would probably be a cost-effectiveness analysis, which allows you to compare how much are you spending to create this change and how much change are you getting. Because sometimes some really expensive interventions like your high fidelity simulation might not actually be the most cost effective because of how much it costs to set up. And that's where I would love to see this research progressing towards.
Yeah, and I suppose if there were a more effective intervention that also came with higher costs, this research suggests that it's important not just to consider the cost of the program, but how much does it offset in terms of being able to enable some people to succeed who might not have otherwise.
Yes, and that's it. It's just one of your many, I guess, tools in your toolbox in making the decision, but it does help a lot, especially when you're discussing that with upper faculty where you're trying to obtain that funding. That sort of economic argument tends to resound quite well with them.
So the "you can't afford not to" argument, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. Thank you for planting these seeds, and it does add another layer to think about as people start trying to imagine how to put forward their arguments for the choice of one strategy versus another. I know it is fairly early days and you're in the midst of your own PhD studies that will take us much deeper into these issues, but I appreciate you taking the time to share your findings with us. Before we sign off, I'll just remind our listeners that the paper we've been talking about is called "The Economic Cost of Failure in Clinical Education, a Multi-Perspective Analysis," and the first author is named Jonathan Fu from Monash University, and it's his voice that you've been hearing. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to talking with you next time.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much, Kevin. It was a pleasure to talk to you.